Hello. Welcome to episode 87 of the very slowly paced Carrier's Edge podcast. I'm trying to get a rise out of Jane, and I think I have. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 87. Where are we at today? So I'm Mark Morrell. I'm going to be your host today and kept in check by
Jane Jasrowy.
Yes. Who's already given me eyes.
You can't do I don't understand why. It's a simple task.
Yeah, well, I've done it so many times.
Hi, welcome to the Carrier's Edge podcast.
Gotta do something different.
Okay.
This is episode 87, which means there's like 43 times that I've done this already.
How about you just do it faster?
Okay.
Do whatever you like, but do it faster. Okay. Moving on.
Here we are. And an interesting schedule or happenstance of scheduling that we are recording this just before I head out to a show, but it's not actually going to be released until after the show. So I'm going to talk about the things that I'm looking forward to
and see if they actually happen.
And by the time this thing gets posted, we will know whether or not it actually happened.
Okay. What are you looking forward to at the Mid-America Trucking Show?
I am.
And exhibition, I think, right?
No, Mid-America Trucking Show.
Oh, no, it's MC&E. That's a different show. Or is it different?
Yeah, that's a very different.
Yeah, it's very. It's like polar opposites, actually. MC&E and Matt's.
Yeah.
Not the same.
So, yes, we are going back to Matt's for the first time since the pandemic. So last time we were there was 2019.
It was a little weird because they didn't cancel it in 2020 until like the last possible moment.
The show was end of March and everybody did their lockdown like middle of March. So there was a week of craziness and then they finally acknowledged that there was no way they could do it.
And then
2021 also, they knew they weren't going to be able to do it then. And then last year they were back.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't go last year for a variety of different reasons. But this year we're back and everything's back to normal. Last year there was still a lot of question marks around COVID and stuff. So we didn't attend, but this year we are back and I am looking forward to it for a bunch of reasons. Chief among them is that it's these driver shows where I actually get to talk to drivers and talk to customers directly and not sort of the administrators, but the actual end users of our product. And Mid-America's tens of thousands of people. So it's not like every one of them is a driver who's going to come and talk to us. But there are a handful. There'll probably be 20 or so, 20 or 30 conversations that happen over the course of the show. And I find those very enjoyable. Have good conversations, get to talk about the things that people are doing, what they like, what they don't like, what's working for them, what they'd like to see, you know, what content they'd like to see. So it's really good market research for us to get a sense of what the drivers are saying and what life is like for them. So I enjoy that quite a bit. I also get to talk to a lot of the smaller fleet people, which you don't normally get at like the larger conventions. So like we were at the TCA convention just when we did the last episode of this podcast, and that's a very different kind of event. It's all executives at mid-sized, larger companies. You don't get a lot of smaller fleets there, and it's a different sort of vibe. Those association conventions have a very different approach. It's more about executive issues and sort of those kind of management discussions. And I get useful information out of those, but coming to a show like Mid-America, I get a very different perspective and I very much enjoy that. So there's not as many of them as there used to be. That's the downside.
Driver shows?
Yeah. There used to be a lot more than there is now. There's Mid-America is pretty much the only one left, the only large show that's left. Driver-focused show that's left in the U.S.
Yeah, I remember the first show that we ever went to, or that I ever went to, I think, was there's a little one in Ontario, Fergus, in the town of Fergus, and they had a driver show there.
That was different. That was like a show and shine. That was pretty much their focus.
Aren't most driver shows show and shines? Like, that's kind of what they are now.
They used to have a significant portion of that. And I'll have to look and see if Mid-America still does that. So yeah, it used to be a lot of those different things and they're not really doing it quite the same anymore.
Because the equipment manufacturers aren't always at, they kind of pulled out of a bunch of shows around COVID as well. And actually the equipment manufacturers pulled out of Matt's a couple of years before COVID.
It was, I think, coming out of the Great Recession, they never really went back. They might've gone back for a year or two and then that was about
it. So any equipment that's there is going to be kind of show and shiny.
Well, there are local dealers that are there. So the manufacturers leave it to the local or regional dealers to take some stuff in. And it's mostly trailer people. and parts. So you get tires and transmissions and things like that.
But Matt's is like a big maze.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool about that show is that you're kind of walking around going, oh, look, this is here.
Yeah.
Well, I guess because I'm not as familiar with the, where the, is it a stadium that they do it in?
It's an exposition center, but it's a massive set of convention halls with an arena in the middle.
Yeah, the arena gets confusing. And you kind of end up walking between the halls through the arena.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird setup. It's not like a convention center, which is just basically a bunch of rooms, some bigger than others. But in that space, there's that whole cement and food around. You know, the food is not, the food is more like an arena. That's where you get, you know, hot dogs.
That's where the food stands are, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a little different than what I'm used to. It's a little bit interesting.
Well, the West Wing where we are, I think, was the original part. That has very much an agricultural fair kind of vibe to it.
Is that that's where we always are?
Yeah, that's where we've been in the past. And that's the original part. You got a very different approach, very different feel to it than the other side of the arena, which is obviously a newer addition. That looks more like a typical convention center. It's brighter, it's higher ceilings, it's bigher rooms, so...
So why do we always go into the old part?
That's the section where tech companies typically are, where the fleets are. It's a different kind of, it's more services rather than the other side, which is more kind of parts and equipment pieces. And it's there's some halls that sort of get a vibe of being all of these large booths and large equipment displays and things like that. And then there's others that are more of the smaller booths that are more about services and technology. Technology meaning software, not trucks, but more of that kind of thing. And you will see some fleets that are in there doing recruiting and stuff. So it just draws a different sort of people.
I think that was the first time that we saw, I think it was at Matt's, that we saw, oh, they're Motive now, but they were Keep Trucking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we thought it was quite bizarre because they had a little toy truck that they were driving around.
Oh, that was actually somebody else beside them.
Oh, was it? Oh, they just were driving it into the Keep Trucking booth?
Yeah. There was another booth around them. It was like a finance or a factoring company or something. And they had a remote control vehicle that was driving around.
I thought it was theirs.
No.
I have been under the impression that it was theirs this whole time, years and years.
Keep Trucking had a huge booth, like a 20 by 40 booth.
Was it 20 by 40 or 20 by 20?
It was quite a large booth.
It was bigger than
theirs. And it was staffed with, I think, a dozen or more, all millennials.
Yes.
Looked like they came straight out of San Francisco. They were giving away t-shirts. Well, Thursday and Friday, they were giving away t-shirts. Then they discovered how much trucking will absorb free product. And there was no shirts left on Saturday.
We could take all the shirts.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these different vendors are set up. This is also one of the things I really enjoy about these shows is I get to see the status of a lot of other people as well. So at Mid-America, you get a lot of the Chinese part suppliers that come in and they'll buy like a block of 30 booths and they'll have all different manufacturers for different parts. And I think last time there was about, it wasn't just, there was one sort of national one from China. There was a Taiwan group, I think. There's another one from Indonesia or something. So you have like these country pavilions with all of these part suppliers.
Yeah, the pavilions and they're all together. Like they kind of, you know, someone goes out and gets them all food at the same time.
Yeah, they're all staffed. They all look exactly the same. But yeah, it's very interesting to see. So when you go back year after year, you can see the evolution of the industry through the changing booths. And the same thing with tech, like we were just talking about Motive/Keep Trucking. I would expect that they are not going to have a booth anything like that this time. They're not going to do a 20 by 20 and give out a ton of t-shirts and things like that. They're sort of settled into focusing more on the executive shows and less on the driver shows. At the time, they were pushing their
freemium.
Yeah, freeware, freemium ELD. But now they're all focused on sort of cameras and
they're all grown up.
Yeah. So I'll be interested in seeing what's happening with some of the other vendors too.
Yeah, you do get a lot of scoop when you're a vendor. And like when you go to a show, it's different because when you're going to a show, you don't necessarily, you know, you might know some products, you might go to certain booths. But when you are a vendor and you are staffing one of these booths, then you're standing there for days and you're looking around and you notice certain people, you notice certain booths. And that's, like you said, you notice the evolution because you keep going back and you say, oh, you got this now. You got, and I'm sure that people around us would have talked about our evolution where we had. I have pictures of the first booth we ever did, which was really sad.
Oh, yeah. The science fair project. That was a long time ago.
The Bristol board and the homemade
homemade banners and things.
Yeah.
That was 2006.
We had no money.
No customers either.
That's true. So no one would have noticed. The only person would have been Greg St. Croix who gave us a quote.
Yeah, but I don't think he even came by.
I don't know, because at that time I was basically working in invisibility.
Yeah.
No one knew who I was. And I think I came with the kids and that was it. Like I sort of came and looked at it and you didn't want me anywhere near there.
That was a later year.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. No. I think I went there because I took pictures.
Not the first year, no.
I didn't?
Nope.
Oh, that's right. I didn't do it the first year. That was a later year. I remember now.
So, yes, it was very different times. And we've certainly changed now. That's Truck World is what you're talking about, which mm-hmm. happens every 2 years. So there's a lot more opportunity to see people change. But Mid-America happening on a yearly basis, you can see. Well, I think this will be sort of the first full show back. I know last year there's a lot of people that still weren't traveling. They still had corporate policies against traveling. So I think this year will be the first sort of full year back and kind of back to normal with everything. So it's going to be very interesting to watch it. I look forward to it. Every time. I'm kind of on the fence that I sort of wish that it wasn't in the outskirts of Louisville like that. It's a place where there's not a lot else around. So you are kind of, you know, it's out by the airport. It's a lot of sort of empty space where there's not that much to do outside of the show. You kind of have to drive everywhere. It would be a little bit more convenient if it was downtown, but then they wouldn't get the attendance. So that's how it goes with these shows. They have to be somewhere that everybody can get to pretty easily and drivers can sort of pass through and have a stop and, you know, walk around for a few hours and then continue their journey.
Yeah, they need a place to park.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of room for parking vehicles. So, yeah, I am I'm curious what it's going to be.
Yeah, and what other shows have we got coming up? Are we going to...
Oh, we've got several.
Tank Truck?
We've got two new conventions that we're attending in May, and that will be interesting in different ways because both of them are new. That they're not driver shows. They're association conventions, but they're associations that we're fairly new members of. So first time going to these things, and they all have the same schedule. I find it funny that the schedule for both of these in May is the same pretty much as the schedule for TCA that we just came back from. Same as ATA in October. Everybody does theirs kind of Sunday to Tuesday and same things happening on each day, roughly the same amount of exhibit space or exhibit time, which is one of the things that's different at the association shows is that you have designated exhibit time. And then after that, everybody goes off to education sessions and meetings and
or getting taken to dinner by other vendors.
But at the truck show, driver show, it's just all exhibit. There is some education stuff happening each day, but not very much. And most people are just walking the floor.
Yes, that is true. But it'll be interesting to go to a totally new show and see. And I think it's all the same no matter what industry you're in. We always find it funny when we're leaving a show and the next show is coming in or when you overlap.
Yes.
And you can see, like, when you first arrive, you see all the badges have your show on it.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody you can see, and there's decorations a lot of the time in the hotel if it's attached to the exhibit hall or something like that. And then kind of on maybe usually the last day, you start seeing other people's badges.
Yeah, you start seeing them take down the signs or where your sign was as the different shows got their sign
up.
Or
they just show new stuff is up mm-hmm. and other people's food is places, you know, like they have things arrayed, like the food is out, but it's not your food.
Yeah.
It's other people's food. So I imagine that every show, like they're all the same. Everybody wants to do things in a particular way for a show. Everybody has and I think if you can meet expectations, that's half your success is that, you know, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. You're going to get, you know, this many people coming to your booth as a visitor to the conference or the exhibit or whatever it is, you're going to be able to see blah, blah, blah. So it is, I think the reason that you're starting to see a pattern is that there is a pattern.
Yeah, for good reasons. Yeah, I understand that. But it kind of makes it a little bit familiar even when you haven't been there. So yeah, that will be fun.
And you and I are not going together. So
no.
There you go.
No.
You're escaping me.
Your time at shows has largely come to an end.
Unless I want to go.
But you don't do very many anymore. Yeah, so we have that happening, but in between those, we've got lots of other things happening, and I thought it would be good to talk a little bit about some content stuff, because yes. We haven't actually talked about course content for a while.
But it doesn't mean that course content hasn't been worked on.
No, lots of it's been happening, just we've been distracted.
Yeah.
So what is happening in the world of content?
There's a lot of rework, but there's a lot of overhauls that are going on that are kind of coming to an end. And the reason that they've taken so long is that if the course is already translated, we can't do the overhaul in one language. We have to do the overhauls in all the languages. So there's that extra time. So normally when it's a new course, usually it takes about 3 months.
Yeah, you put the course out and then leave it in the field for a month or so and then translate it.
Right.
But when you're doing an overhaul, we replace the old course. So you put the new one out, but then ultimately you want to retire the old one. But if people are in the middle of using it or they are relying on an alternate language, you can't retire the old one until the new one is available in all those languages too.
Yep. So that's what we've been doing. Defensive driving for straight truck is the English is... I believe done. It's can't remember if it's in translation or it's ready to go to translation. But this one was a really hard one for us. It was really challenging because there's nothing really. It's that whole oral tradition. People don't have any content on straight trucks that's available. Like there are, and everybody has something very slightly different that they want to see on in a straight truck course. Mm-hmm. So we had our biggest challenge was backing. I mean, backing a tractor trailer, I think everybody.
Yeah, there's a million YouTube videos on that and everybody's got a process for it.
And it's a huge issue. So people are very, you know, it's a big thing to talk about. Straight truck, not even nothing like crickets. So we were doing a lot of our own research, and then we were reaching out to emailing. Mark doesn't like the term reaching out. Neither do I, actually. So I'm just trying to find a good version of something that I can't remember how we contacted people, but I think we emailed.
Yeah, you contacted them. You did not fondle them.
I didn't reach out.
You kept your hands to yourself.
I kept my hands to myself, but I did contact a couple of customers, and through just varying contacts with different people, we've kind of gotten our course together, and we finally got another customer to review it, and it seems like it landed. It was the backing. It was the specific backing lesson that we wanted to make sure we had nailed. Because it's not just the instructions on how to back, it's also the animations. You know, if you're not doing that right and you look like you're going to hit the wall, then that's not very good training.
Do not hit the wall.
Yeah, don't hit the wall. And so Berenice has backed up a truck in a variety of ways now, but it's all been in animation. So we're working on that. We also, and this is where the problem first started, because we did an overhaul of winter driving and kind of realized after the fact that, oh, we have to translate this because we can't release it.
The support says nobody's going to use this without French.
Yeah. So we had a little bit of a silo issue where content was just busily doing what they do, and we didn't really connect with customer experience to find out what they wanted. So now we know, and we have this whole new process of how we do overhauls. But and unfortunately, it is kind of, we're getting into spring, but we do have the French and the Spanish done.
Ready for next year.
Next year, your winter driving training experience will be a whole lot nicer. It will be all, sparkly and new and updated and things like that. So we're updating distracted driving. We're just about to do the translations. We have a new member of the platform team who is kind of the content team, can basically ask him to make widgets for us. So we have a couple of really cool interactive widgets in the distracted driving course. One is a test. It's called a Stroop test, and it's how you can show that you can't really think of two things at once.
Test your distraction, your cognitive load.
Yeah. And because you don't really notice because it goes by so fast, but when you start timing it, you can see the difference. And we had a kind of a clunky version in the current distracted driving, but now we have one that's a lot smoother and it's a lot prettier. So distracted driving, winter driving, we're also doing an overhaul of TDG, which is hazmat in Canada. And the issue with TDG is that there's a reg change that's coming where you have to train people in a certain manner. So you have to have a general awareness for everybody, but you also have to have function specific. So for drivers, it has to be the driving function. So what we've done an overhaul. I'm doing a review with one of our customers today, shortly after this, actually. And I think it's mostly there. So we have the translation, but depending on the edits that we get through the review process, we're probably going to have to do some changes in French too. But what we did was we wrote it so that we can release it in the way that people are used to taking it. But when the new regs come out and we have to split it up, we can split it up easily and basically just dump in the new pages because we've got the new content ready to go.
So the challenge there on the replacement will be for the customer experience team and for platform team as well is managing the certificates, because people that complete those get a certificate that expires every 3 years, and our system tracks those expiries based on the course. So we'll have to have a plan for that.
It's going to be interesting. So I think you're going to get a certificate for both sets of courses, but right. The function specific is the one that is going to be required roadside.
Yeah. The question is, when do you need to do that new one? Because if you've got an old certificate, they're not going to be invalidated, right? They're not forcing everybody to go through it again. So it's just when you're up for renewal. So we've got to make sure that renewal picks up the new course.
Yeah.
That's where the challenge is.
Yeah. So we're going to have two sets of TDG certificates running around and everybody's going to have this. So enforcement is going to have to deal with two sets of certificate requirements.
It might be time for us to finally implement a co-requisite in our system.
I don't know what a co-requisite is.
Co-requisite is multiple courses that are all equivalent. So you're supposed to take this, but if you take this other one instead, it's the same. And then have certificates or expiries pick up on that.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Yeah, people have asked for it off and on for years, but there's never been enough of a push that it was worth doing. But for this, it might be worth finally doing.
So going back to all of the overhauls, and I think I've talked about this before, but it's like the only other one that we haven't touched is cargo securement. And we have so many different variations of that.
Which one or all of them?
So we've done whole whack of work on hours of service. That's all pretty much done. Done defensive driving, tractor trailer. We're also working on straight truck right now, which is pretty much done, just needs to be translated. We also are coming out with defensive driving for tanker and another tanker course. Oh, vehicle inspection for tanker. So vehicle inspection for tanker is nearly done in English. So it'll probably be released next month. We also have vehicle inspection for auto haulers, which has already been done, but we're going to be adding on loading and unloading to auto haulers. So we have, and all of these courses are kind of two-thirds done, between two-thirds and, you know, seven-eighths done. It drives me up the wall when this happens.
There's always that kind of log jam and then a whole pile of them come out.
I know. I get very antsy because I just want to get it finished. Finish it. And it's all just sort of sitting there. It could feel like there's content constipation. You know? Like it's just sitting there.
There's a lovely visual.
I know. It's like my...
You're going to have somebody animate that now.
No. No. We do not need animation of that. It's just, I think everybody's getting kind of tired of it. It's just tired of, you know, winter driving. It will be nice to just finally have that. Oh, and we also have, we're doing a few courses that are non-driver, which have been requested by customers, but also that we should have them. So we have a Canadian and US versions of just kind of regular sexual harassment that is being worked on. We have the California regs, but we are doing basically those regs are kind of special for California. So we're doing versions that are just regular. We're also doing, we have an emotional intelligence course that we are just working on for a customer. And this one's kind of cool because it's really a good it's a good basis for how to deal with people is understanding your own emotional intelligence and how you, because the way that it's explained in the course is that IQ, which is your intelligence quotient, is basically how easily you learn, like how you can take in new information and then apply it to problem solving. For emotional intelligence, it's how you take in sort of nonverbal language and then how you apply that and react to other people. So that is, if you are supervising, if you're a dispatcher, if you're a supervisor, if you're a fleet manager.
It's kind of like a prerequisite to any management or leadership course that we might do.
Yeah, you should have some idea of how you interpret other people and what you do in return. Like that's like the basis of communication. Mm-hmm. And good communication is the basis to running a good company. So it's a very good place to start.
Yeah, that will be really useful because we have a lot of customers that are kind of in management positions for the first time,
mm-hmm.
right? Like safety people or people that get into safety because they like the compliance side of it, but then end up having to deal with all of the interpersonal stuff that comes along with it. So
yeah,
that will be really useful.
And even when you're like, I've been interested in emotional intelligence for years. I think I was at some conference and it wasn't trucking. It was, I don't know, some tech conference where they were talking about emotional intelligence. Oh, it must have been like 15, 20 years ago, where someone had written a book about it. And I thought it was quite fascinating because one of the things that I get accused of regularly is, well, not anymore, but I used to, is being too emotional. And so seeing something about emotional intelligence was like, hey, okay, well, let me look at this a different way. And so I heard about EQ, which is emotional quotient. So you can actually measure it. And if you do a search for emotional quotient assessments or emotional intelligence assessments, you can find all the kinds of free ones. And it's really all about how do you interpret other people's reactions and how do you react to them? It was like, what do you do you think about it? Do you not think about it? What are your triggers? That kind of thing. And it kind of reframed for me that I had something of value in this area to contribute because I'm very emotionally intelligent because for a variety of reasons that I won't get into. But when you have certain childhood experiences, your spidey senses get really, really strong. And that's really what it is being able to see what's going on and interpret it correctly without anybody telling you. That's a big part of it. And when you are the child of an alcoholic, then you get really good at that. So, and anybody else who has had that experience will be nodding their heads going, yep.
Yeah, I wonder if there's, I'm just sort of going through in my head as you're talking about it and thinking that we may want to position that a little bit differently when we release it. Because emotional intelligence, I understand that's sort of the discipline in the area and what it's kind of formally called, but it has a bit of a vibe of sort of a touchy-feely hippie thing that's like, yeah, who cares about that? But really, what you're talking about is maximizing interpersonal relationships, making the most of nonverbal communication and all of those kind of things that are really useful in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's a different, or is a subtitle maybe in there that I'm sort of thinking press release in my head, how we position it.
Yeah, you wouldn't position it the way I just said it.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't position it that way. But it is really good for, especially when you're dealing with people who are not with you in front of you. There's one thing, like body language is really important and being able to interpret body language. Like right now, your arms are folded and you're I can see you sitting there and I'm laughing at you because you're giving me a silly look.
I'm just sitting here normally.
In general, if you're people who you're folding your arms, that insinuates that you're kind of annoyed. You're closed off. You're annoyed about something. But I know you're probably cold. And yes. That's the other thing. Do you know that there's different information that could be applied to the situation? And you're also uncomfortable because you're sitting on these stools. Like we've got these awful stools. We gotta get comfortable stools.
Yeah, these stools keep us tight on our schedule so that we never go too long.
80 episodes or still, we haven't switched out the stools.
Yes.
But anyway, emotional intelligence is very interesting. We're also doing manual materials handling, which is mostly pick things up safely, put them down safely, don't reach in weird ways. And you would not believe how much content there is on that subject. and how much you have to do. It's like fall protection. When I did fall protection, it was like, okay, well, which kind of falls are we talking? Are we talking falls, you know, falling on the ice, falling from a ladder, falling from a height? There's three different aspects to that, which, by the way, in our course cards, we need all three aspects, because if you use a picture for one, you're missing the other two. So anyway, that's, we are working on that right now too.
Wow, that's a lot.
I know, there's a lot going on in content.
And you mentioned something just before we started that really I thought was fascinating, and I don't recall exactly what it was. It was something about liquid in a tank.
Oh, yeah. So we are working on the defense of driving for tanker as well. And this actually is part of, we're also working on, keep forgetting all these courses. We're also working on a TDG course for
fuel haulers.
And this comes into play here too. So when you're hauling fuel, but also when you're just hauling liquid. So it doesn't, you know, the same thing, because fuel is liquid, obviously. But any liquid, could be water, it could be any kind of liquid. So the liquid in a tank, doesn't even matter what kind of tank it could be, just, you know, the tanker could just be full of it, or you could have different partitions. It behaves in a certain way that is kind of, you have to understand how to control a vehicle, which is being affected by the movement of water. So when you stop, the water will move up. If you stop fast, the water will move up more forcefully.
When you go around a corner, it wants to keep going straight.
Yeah. So the inertia, like all of the forces that you get normally, just are exacerbated by water, because water kind of moves slightly differently than the vehicle. So the force is going to be on the vehicle, but it's also separately going to act on the water, and the water will respond slightly differently than the vehicle. So you're dealing with two different sets of forces. And the issue that we have right now is we want to animate the force, like we want to animate what's happening inside the tank, as you would, which is, I mean, to me, it seems like, I have no idea how this is done, but Berenice, who is our creative lead and also our 3D animator, is investigating how to actually animate water. She's looking at it in 2D or 3D. If she can do 3D, then she'll do it. But she was saying that there's all kinds of particle things that you have to do if you're doing 3D, which that's pretty much, that's all I understand. But that's what we're working on now, is how to actually animate this. And so it's going to look realistic and show those actual forces. We could do a still, but I think animation would be a lot nicer.
And way more fun. Like, it'll be work, but it will be a fun project, I would bet. Figuring out how to animate that.
It would be really cool is to have some sort of widget where you move the vehicle and you can see what the water is doing. But that's a bit.
I would imagine that there is a plugin somewhere for Maya to help with that. Because if you think about all of the different games and other places where there is going to be fluid in motion.
Oh, yeah.
Water-based games, things like that. There's going to be something.
Like I said, I don't think it. She said that she's already found some stuff and she thinks it's doable. I just, you know, I just have no knowledge of this, which is weird, because I'm usually, it's funny because for most graphic stuff, I have at least a basic working knowledge. 3D graphics, I do not.
There are so many different elements to that.
It's, yeah. And just listening to Berenice talk about it, kind of just in passing, it's like, really? What? What's that? What's rigging? What's texture? Like, how do you?
Yeah.
Because you basically.
Rigging is the hard part.
No, I think building the actual 3D object is the hard part. We buy a lot of our 3D. We buy and then we fiddle with the stuff that we buy, but we buy a lot of them already built.
Yeah, it's time consuming.
Building the scene, because you can't just have. Like, scenery doesn't come out of nowhere. You have to build it. So you have the scenery, you have the vehicles that you have to animate around the scenery. You know, if you want people, all those individual people, like, you know, how detailed do you want them to be? Do you know?
Yeah, that's why you generally can't just hire a 3D animator. You hire somebody who's an object modeler, or somebody who's a rigging creator, or somebody who does lighting, or what's the final stage of that?
Rendering?
No, before that, where it's after, it's sort of related to lighting, but there's other effects that you apply to it.
I don't know.
So, or, well, then there's a, you know, texture mapping people who make sure the right textures are there and that they're reflecting properly.
But we don't have a whole 3D studio going on, so I don't have. I have Berenice, who is awesome.
Yeah, and we're lucky to find her.
Yeah.
And have somebody who does a little bit of all of those things and also does a ton of other types of stuff that is fantastic as well.
But that's one of the problems. Mm-hmm. I think we've solved the whole, well, we've solved the backing, the straight truck. Then the next defensive driving, like after tanker, I think we're going to do one for auto hauler, which is hopefully just going to be a, like, just put in pictures of auto haulers rather than trucks. But with a very little, I don't think there's going to be huge amounts.
No, the one that's going to be requested will be livestock, because that's the same kind of thing where you've got a whole set of other dynamics at play.
Oh, yeah. We need to talk to, we have a couple of livestock customers, and one of whom is Flea to Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I think we will tap the brains there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of courses to do. No matter how many courses you do, there's always lots to do.
I know. There's always a lot.
Yeah.
But so that's kind of in a nutshell what we're doing in content.
Okay. Well, very good. So I have been swamped and pulling in a whole lot of people to do a complete overhaul of our website.
I thought we weren't going to talk about the website.
I'm not going to talk about it a whole lot, but it's coming. Phase one is coming to an end. Which is like the version one, bare bones, minimum viable product, just for the US version, because they're totally separate US and Canadian versions now. Version one is coming, which means that people can work on some other stuff. I can release the 7 people that have been working on it for the past 3 months.
That includes me.
Yes, a lot of people in there, and it looks great. I'm very happy with all the work everybody's put in. But outside of that, we're going to be embarking on a different kind of project where we are moving to the other side of the desk to become customers of a trucking company.
Yes.
Or more specifically, a moving company. So we are starting the journey, well, starting the figurative journey. The literal journey will come in May. But we are going to be doing a large cross-country move, which means that we need to pack up our household and get it shipped. And having been in this house for over 20 years, we have a lot of stuff that it turns out we don't really need. So
much of it we don't need.
You know, the movers ask, you know, how big a house are you moving? And I was like, well, it's a 4-bedroom house, but 2 bedrooms are empty. And
literally empty.
And some of the other rooms really have barely any furniture. And a lot of the stuff that's in the basement, I'm looking at it and like, I don't need to see that ever again. That can just go. And we've realized that even though we are a fully remote company, our house has kind of been sort of like a de facto head office, and that we've kept a lot of physical files and like old trade show booths and a lot of that stuff that we really shouldn't move, that should stay more central. So we're going to move that into like a storage unit or something that others have access to.
Yeah, the company is going to stay in Ontario, like our kids.
Yeah.
Just us. Now I'm thinking about it. I don't know what we're going to furnish our house with.
Well, we have furnishings for the rooms in our new place, but there's a bunch of stuff that we have realized we don't need to take with us. And also, one of the things that we learned about how real estate works now that's very different is when you buy a house, you can ask for the furniture as well. It's like, we want those bits of furniture and these, so we've got some stuff in the new place that we liked, and at the same time, stuff we really don't want here, we sold it with the house. So
yeah,
kitchen furniture is like, yeah, those stools, that table, so it's great.
Yeah, we have a huge mirror that we don't want, when we don't want to move. It was like, yeah, you can keep that in the house. It's almost like it's so big that it's almost like it's the wall.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about that thing.
Yeah, like there's like it's a mirrored wall.
Yeah, now we'll stay.
And so the kitchen table.
Yeah, bar stools.
Bar stools, yeah. Because we're getting bar stools at the new place.
We don't need to bring like our mini fridge because we got the one that comes with the house out there. So.
And it was really so bizarre because, yeah, when we moved into this house, we had to have all our appliances.
Yeah, we moved everything.
The appliances weren't included.
No.
So I assumed that appliances weren't included anymore, but no, they are.
Well, when we moved in here, that was before the era of staging and all of this real estate craziness. So a lot has changed.
Yeah, it has definitely changed a lot, but I'm really looking forward to being out west.
Well, I am also kind of enjoying learning about how the moving industry works.
Yes.
Because I just assumed that it was You know, it's a cross-country move. Okay, it's either a solo or a team driver. And if it's a solo, it's probably a week to get there. You know, they pack up here, the solo guy, or maybe they send a team and do the delivery so they can get it done in a few days and then pick something else and come back. Like, that's normally how trekking works, except not in the moving industry. So a lot of times, apparently, they put it on a train. And then so they have a local crew at each end that does it. And they put the container on a train and ship it. And if they're doing the traditional with sort of a team driving it out there, it's usually done as an LTL move. So there's picks and drops along the way. So it could be a week, could be 3 weeks. You don't know. So I'm learning a lot. We have to figure out which direction we want to go, how we want to set this up. And I see they even have like AI-based tools that will take video of your house and then figure out all the packing requirements from there. And then I guess figure out the weight and all of those other things. So I'm in the process of going through that as well. But that's part of what's making me realize, oh, well, I don't need to take a picture of that because we're not taking it. You know? Yeah. And then, oh, well, we've got this pile of stuff and some of it's coming and some of it isn't. So we need to separate these things. But I will take care of that when I'm back from Matt's.
There's a whole subcategory of things or a subcategory of this move, which is how to dispose of all the garbage that we have accumulated. Because we're in the basement and I'm looking at this, I don't know, 25 paint cans.
Oh, well, that's your job.
I know.
Yeah, that's getting rid of all of like the empty paint cans.
And batteries stuff. And like all the hazardous waste.
But some of those paint cans we have to keep because those are the samples of the paint in the different rooms. So we want to keep those so that the new owners can see if they need to do touch-ups or they need to go and get some new stuff.
But we've got this roll of kind of foam stuff.
Oh, that's underneath the floor in my studio. It's a subfloor.
Oh, and there's also like just wood. There's just...
Yeah, all the gut junk people are going to do very well. They've had two trips here, I think, already, and they'll be back at least one more time.
I know. Yeah, we have a really intense amount of junk.
And I'm too lazy to like try and put it on some website and sell stuff. Like, I'm just not that guy. So I will just put it at the end of the driveway for someone to come and take or give it to the junk people and they can go and distribute it to a charity or something. Just get it out of my face.
Yeah. Well, we had that with the piano. I mean, you cannot give away a piano anymore.
Nobody wants them. They're like places lousy with pianos.
If you want a piano, the secret is just ask for a piano and someone will have one that you can have.
It won't be a great piano, but it will be there.
Yeah. But for a lot of people, their first piano is not a big deal.
Doesn't need to be great.
So we ended up, the got junk people will take pianos.
They charge extra for that.
I know, because no one wants a piano and they're hard to move. So we didn't want the piano because it was used for our daughter who is learning piano. And it was a I am learning piano piano. It was not great, not terrible.
Functional.
It did the job. Yeah. We have no emotional attachment to this thing. So unfortunately, she wasn't here when we got rid of the piano. And I felt a bit bad about that because she spent a lot of time with the piano and you spent a lot of, you didn't seem to care. But so we're getting rid of this piano. But we did find out it went to a good home.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know.
It's going to.
Somebody who paints them or something.
Yeah. And puts them in various places for people to play. Like an outdoor, kind of like when we went out east and there was a piano on the dock and people would just go and play the piano. That's the kind of thing, which is nice.
Yeah, so we will have more updates on that as the adventure unfolds. But I think for now, that's good enough and we can
wrap it up.
Wrap this up for today. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, have a good day.